Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Current Affairs Podcast, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis Podcast and Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Media Manager here in Washington, D.C. The world is marking 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. The activities started on November 25th and will end on December 10th. This is a UN-led annual campaign to end a gender-based violence by 2030. In this context, various activities have been taking place in our broadcast region in Central Asia. So on today's show, we plan to discuss about some of those activities as well as the ongoing challenges to achieve the desired outcome. To discuss them, I'm joined by Khalida Ajigulova, the director of the Research Center for Human Rights, Inclusion and Civil Society, and an associate professor at the Eurasian Technology University. Khalida is joining us from Kazakhstan. Irina Matvienko is joining us. She is a feminist activist and the director of the Nemulchi.us, which stands for Don't Be Silent. Irina is joining us from Uzbekistan. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. So let's start with you, Khalida. Earlier, we have been talking about your ongoing projects in connection with this campaign. So let's do this. First, we will talk about some of the ongoing or the recent activities. I know we have a lot to talk about in terms of your struggle for the good cause. We get to them momentarily. So about your ongoing activities, what you have been up to as the region marks this important annual cycle.
Indeed, domestic violence, gender-based violence is a big issue in the region and in Kazakhstan. And since the beginning of this campaign, I have been giving open lectures to universities and the wider public on the causes of domestic violence and, most importantly, on the consequences of domestic violence. Unfortunately, in our society, the consequences of domestic violence and the problem itself is undermined, and many people still don't see it as a form of violence, and unfortunately the majority of population still think that this is just a conflict, a family conflict that should be resolved by the family itself, and they believe that there's no reason why victims of violence should apply to police, and as a result, unfortunately, we have quite a few tragedy cases when after a series of beatings, unfortunately, a spouse just murdered his wife and or children. And unfortunately, yes, this is the problem we're trying to educate on our population in Kazakhstan.
Wow. Thank you, Khalida. So as I was saying, you have had a long fight that includes your efforts to get the law passed in parliament, which would empower women and ban the type of violence you are talking about. So with your initial success, the effort ended up with a disappointing outcome. So we will get to them in details shortly. So let me bring in Irina. So what's happening in Uzbekistan with regards to this campaign? We heard a lot about your heroic work out there. Tell us about some of your own ongoing projects, especially with regards to this day and what's happening in general in Uzbekistan about this day.
On November 25, we launched a campaign to encourage activists in the regions, together with UN Women and the Nemalchi Central Asia, because Nemalchi has departments in every country of Central Asia. So we decided to name one activist in every country every day. Hmm. And these activists are civil activists. They are not belongs to NGO or to government. And they support the fight for women rights, gender equality, and so on. That's our activity for this period.
Is there anything else has been happening outside of your own organization in Uzbekistan to mark this day or to create awareness about the situation in the country? What's the kind of general picture about this issue in the country as the region marks this important day?
As I know, different NGOs, also Gender Commission, they organize different activities. For example, ACTED, this is French NGO, They organize different contests with journalists, also with us, and they just encourage journalists or victims of domestic violence to show their stories, to help others find their way and take freedom from domestic violence.
Right.
So I think it's very important because domestic violence is very common and maybe it's just a common thing in our society.
Right.
And it's very important to raise awareness about it.
Right. Of course, we would have loved to have someone from Kyrgyzstan. My guest dropped out in the last minute, and my last minute efforts to recruit a new speaker didn't work out. But in the absence of a Kyrgyz speaker, Bruce, let me bring you in. So what has been happening in Kyrgyzstan on this occasion? I know you just did a story on a similar topic involving Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. So tell us about what's going on there. Anything stands out in Kyrgyzstan when compared to what our guests have been saying about their respective countries?
Well, I would say that the problem of domestic violence, just because of the nature of the media in Kyrgyzstan, is getting more of a presence than it used to. I mean, there are reports about it. Unfortunately, I don't see very many that have like a good end, but certainly it's being marked. Like, the Bishkek Feminist Organization, for instance, is marking this from, I think, starting tomorrow until December 10th. They have an exhibition in Bishkek that they're inviting people to come and see. So, this is an example of one group that's trying to do something. There have been events around it, but, it was unfortunate that right before this happened, there was a trial at the Supreme Court. This young woman named Gulnara Pasanova. Last year, her husband had beaten her habitually for a while. He was older than her by 15 or 16 years. And he had apparently he drank. These would be stories that are familiar all over Central Asia, unfortunately. But he drank and he was going to hit her. And he had a knife, she said. And so to self-defense, she hit him on the head with a metal bar that was there in the place. And he ended up dying, And so the husband's family, pressed the court to file charges against her, even though all the neighbors said they were willing to testify that this was, she was habitually abused and beaten by her husband. And the court refused to admit a lot of evidence to this trial. And in the end, they convicted her and sentenced her to, 10 years in jail. And on appeal, it was reduced. But again, her husband's family appealed the verdict and wanted her to get the full punishment, for killing this guy. At least the Supreme Court upheld the verdict that lowered the sentence from 10 years to 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we all remember the case several months ago about the woman in the south of Kyrgyzstan that her husband was filming while he hung tires from her. Mm-hmm. And had her standing outside and was dumping water on her and slapping her and stuff. And, and this was, as we heard, this was one of those cases where the authorities said it's a family problem and why don't you just work it out? Mm-hmm. And she dropped the complaint, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because there's not really much support, not enough, for a lot of women in Central Asia.
I think earlier we also had another case. Her name was Burultay, I guess, right?
Yeah, right. She was killed.
She was killed in police custody.
Alakachu, the bride kidnapping.
Right. No, it's horrific. I mean, thank you very much, Bruce, for bringing up all these examples. So let's also talk about some of the examples from the other countries. When you say, Khalida, for instance, when you say mm-hmm. Domestic violence or gender-based violence, what are we really talking about? Can you give us some of the concrete examples, how we should imagine that, how we should picture that?
Yes, I can give some statistics of this year. And for example, during the first 8 months of 2020, the police received about 130,000 reports of domestic violence. So these were the reports made either by the victims themselves, but these were adult people and mainly women, or by neighbors and relatives of the victims. And unfortunately, out of these 130,000 reports, only 25% of cases were brought to court. So it means that in 75% of cases, victims, they do not continue with making an official statement or application to the police to initiate administrative or criminal proceedings. And the main reason to that is, of course, the pressure from the family, from relatives, on the woman not to file any complaint against her husband, because this would be a sort of shame, she would inflict shame on her family. And we see that this is one of the main reasons why for many years, husbands, usually men, the spouses, male spouses, they just continue torturing their wives until, unfortunately, they may one day kill them. And also what I want to mention is that we currently have an updated statistics on the increase in domestic violence cases during the pandemic period, the current quarantine period. And according to the Ministry of Internal Affairs, during the pandemic, the level of domestic violence increased by 41.7% compared to the same period in 2019. So we believe that this is quite a serious issue, and that's why we need to continue and step up our efforts in combating domestic violence in our country.
Right. Irina, is there any examples that you can share with us from Uzbekistan in terms of the domestic violence examples?
I can say that we adopted the law to protect women from harassment and violence in past year. But in my opinion, this law is declarative because there is still no responsibility for economic or psychological violence. And for example, if women experience these kinds of violence, nobody can protect her from them, despite this law. And protection orders, they are not effective because when women applies for protection orders, our government, our police just initiate a kind of talk with her partner and give her this piece of paper, protection order, and that's all. And for example, if someone beats woman, he will receive this paper. Don't do it more. That's all. So I think we must to promote or to give special punishment for harassers or abusers. Right. But I know that our government sometimes tries to change this, but I not see these ways are effective.
Yeah, and because of our technical capacity, we could not have people from all the countries, and certainly things are not really optimistic in Tajikistan, in Turkmenistan. Is there anything, Bruce, you would like to share about these two countries before I move on?
There are, you know, there's like Guruksar in Tajikistan, and we've spoken with people from them before, and they're trying to do what they can in Tajikistan also, at least in the Ho-Chan region. You know, I mean, the problems that we've heard described are pretty much the, it's similar all the way across. Like I said, at least in Kyrgyzstan and to some extent in Kazakhstan, and thanks to Irina, also now more in Uzbekistan, some of these things are getting some attention.
Right.
But, you know, in Tajikistan, it really doesn't make the news very much. You know, I mean, they had one case that was kind of highlighted recently. It was a little bit of a tangent, but there was some sexual harassment in the workplace. And it was a young woman who's a fashion designer named Parveen Jahangiri.
Right.
And she filed a case against her employer and saying that she was sexually harassed by him and generally harassed by him. And it ended up that she was the one that was ended up as the defendant. And was forced to pay a fine, and a newspaper that printed an interview with her was also fined for doing that. So it was just, it's absurd, but it kind of shows that it's, unfortunately, it's a real uphill battle, and justice is not equal in these countries. That's one of the problems.
Yeah.
When you're a woman and you go before the court, you don't get the same kind of consideration that men do. It's clear,
right,
especially domestic violence.
You know, that brings us to the campaign and what kind of impact we are really having, as you guys were talking about. These campaigns have been taking place for many years in the region. So what kind of changes are they making? What kind of differences are these campaigns making? Are you satisfied from the outcome? If not, what kind of challenges are you facing? What kind of fightbacks are you facing? What can be really done about this situation? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Khalida Ajigulova, the director of the Research Center for Human Rights Inclusion in Civil Society in Kazakhstan, Irina Matvienko, feminist activist, joining us from Uzbekistan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi, joining us from Prague. I'm Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast, and Araf Yaralı's media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the challenges with regards to gender equality in Central Asia in the context of UN-led 16 days campaign of activism against gender-based violence. Let me start with you, Khalida. So I hear from all of you that you are not satisfied from the response you are getting from the authorities, despite these violences continues, despite horrific nature of these violence. Just to kind of wondered why these cases, this situation is being pushed into backseat. What is authorities' problem here? Why they are not picking it up?
You know, you're absolutely right that we don't really see sufficient support from our authorities in combating violence in Kazakhstan. But I believe the situation in the society is gradually changing, and we do see the importance of such campaigns as 16 Days of Activism to Combat Violence, because this gives us an opportunity to raise this issue in the first place. As I mentioned before, the majority of our population, they prefer not to talk about such issues because it is still a shame, you know, for a woman to confess that she has been beaten by her husband. And even if she confesses, when she confesses, she becomes a victim of victim blaming. So she's blamed as a victim and she does not really get sufficient support. On the other hand, you know, in Kazakhstan, we do have a law, a 2009 law on prevention of domestic violence. And Kazakhstan was the first country in the region and among the CIS states to adopt such a law in 2009. And over the past 10 years, we realized that the law does not really help much, you know, contain sufficient measures to prevent violence in the first place, and also it allows for punishment.
That's the thing, right? I mean, there needs to be a kind of real commitment by the authorities to implement the law which exists. I mean, I'm just trying to understand what is preventing authorities taking up these.
I would say, you know, on the one hand, it's a lack of political will on behalf of certain authorities, because, for example, right now we hold discussions with the Ministry of Interior, with the Prosecutor General's office, you know, to toughen up the punishment, to adopt other measures, preventive measures, you know, that could help, you know, for example, the aggressors to deal with their anger, to manage their anger and so on. However, we see the resistance from the Ministry of Interior because from their point of view, everything is fine. Well, you know, the new law is not really needed. And unfortunately, we also see the lack of understanding on the part of our society why we should have such a law. They still believe that violence, domestic violence, is just a conflict, as I mentioned before, that should be decided independently by a woman and her husband. However, in the majority of cases, a woman cannot say a word to her husband. And for years, she just tolerates this violence and keeps silent.
Right. Yeah. You know, when you are in the position of authority, you can't simply ignore these violences continue and ignore them calling a family matter of some sort. Bruce, let me bring you in here. Earlier, you were giving an example of a fashion designer in Tajikistan who filed lawsuit against her boss of harassment and ended up having to defend herself and paying fine. It's just not one example, Bruce. You see case after case. There has to be something which needs to be taken care of. I know authorities in Central Asia are sensitive when asked for a political reform. It's not even a politics. This is social and humanitarian matter that needs a firm commitment. You know, I just can't understand what's the problem here. Why authorities are so hesitant to take firm action? I mean, what are their possible calculations behind their lack of proper action?
Well, you know, the first hurdle, as you know, as Halida was just kind of explaining, the first hurdle you have to get over is to get past this being like a family dispute, right? You know, we've heard before when we've done shows on gender equality that there's a lot of pressure on these women. It's not just you go to court and the judge seems unsympathetic or the police say, why don't you work it out? I mean, even people in the community will tell these women often that they should just let it go. For the sake of the family, you just have to take it. You know, so you have to have a lot of courage and a lot of strength to even get these cases to court, because it seems like all too often there's so many people against you, and they're not all men. I mean, a lot of them are women that are telling them to just drop it and leave it alone, you know. But even when they do get to court, like I said, to say that it's a patriarchal society is just too simplistic of a way of looking at it. But there is a lot in that, because, you know, like I said, once you're in the courtroom and domestic dispute, the courts tend to side with the males and not with the females in the court. It's the way it's been. And they need to get judges and the judiciary to understand that they have to look at this fair. Someone is a victim here, and you got to consider that real carefully and take this seriously, their claims. But all too often, you know, there's so much pressure on the defendant or on the plaintiff, the person that brought the case, the woman who said that she's been assaulted. You know, there's so much pressure on her to just drop the case all the time, you know, and what happens if she wins, right? Okay, she wins and then she's got to get divorced, you know, and then, you know, once again, it's a societal pressure that'll come on and say, you know, that she, you know, the fear that you'll be branded as someone who took their husband to court, got him thrown in jail. You know, I was hoping that Arena would talk about this case that they just had in Samarkand. It's a horrible case, but he'd also been abusing his wife, and he actually forced her to, she was to have a baby, and he actually forced her to eat the poop out of the baby's diaper. He actually did get sentenced to prison for 6 years, I think. But, you know, this is, I mean, that's an unusual case, and it's one that got a lot of publicity. And that's not usually the outcome.
Let's bring in Irina. Irina, is there anything you would like to add on that specific case?
I can describe any specific case because I prepared some stat data, common data for the country, and I would like to share it.
Okay.
Is it possible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Our government pretends to fight domestic violence, but it seems to me that it's just a declarative, as I said. For example, they said they want to fight against abusers. And at the same time, our country has a very complicated divorce procedure. People can't divorce for years, and women are forced to live with abusers. Or, for example, we hear that it's necessary to involve women in public and political life. But in reality, we see that there is only one woman in our government among 40 people. Only 11% of landowners are women, and less than 20% of all entrepreneurs are women. It seems to be thoughts with deeds. From the stands, they tell us one thing, but they do another things in reality. And it makes difficult to believe in laws. And the fact that and to believe that our state has real intentions to change gender stereotype or fight against domestic violence. Mm-hmm.
So, Irina, I mean, you guys as an activist who are fighting to change the situation, the type of complaints that you are talking about, when you explain to them that these laws that just remains on paper, it does not work in reality, what kind of response you get?
Well, they just don't hear me and don't see me. So I feel delegitimization. They start to ignore me. I tell about our government because at first they were very friendly, but because I see that we must do a lot to improve our laws, I write about it, I speak about it, and I criticize our laws. And they decided to ignore me. This is my problem, and it's very difficult because I write something and I don't see any response. We are in touch with our police department because, yes, I see they try to change something, but the system doesn't work. And they can't change all the system. They just can change only just part of their job.
Speaking of system, though, Khalida, earlier you had a kind of interesting experience to change the system within, with you managing to get the bill into the parliament's agenda in Kazakhstan, which, if had went through, would have empowered the struggle for gender equality a lot. But your struggle didn't go through the way you expected, as there were fight back by a portion of the society, as a result of which, I guess, the bill was ultimately dropped. So on Irina's note, there are two points on which I would like you to comment on. First, tell us please about your experience of getting the bill up to that point. And secondly, what happened to that draft, which I thought was a success?
Yes. For the last 3 years, our NGOs, non-governmental organizations, they have been advocating for a long period with our authorities to initiate legislative reform and introduce changes to the existing law in order to fill in the gaps. Because, for example, right now, what we have is a very mild punishment for domestic abusers, which does not prevent them from committing domestic violence in the first place or in the second or third instances. For example, right now, according to our administrative legislation, and domestic violence is considered to be an administrative offense in Kazakhstan since 2017. So right now, a family abuser can break an arm, ribs, a jaw, inflict a head injury to his wife. But if the wife is hospitalized for less than 21 days, then these injuries are considered to be a mild harm to health. And according to our legislation, this abuser gets only two types of punishment, a warning by a court or an arrest up to 15 days. So, and then if the person, the same aggressor, commits exactly the same violence in the next 12 months, he will get an arrest for up to 20 days. But there is no criminal punishment, you know, for assault. And in reality, a husband can beat up his wife as many times as he wants, and he can get only administrative arrest, but no criminal punishment or any lengthy sentence, you know, for up to several years. So, and again, because of the societal pressure, quite often women, they just prefer not to report such incidents and keep silent. So in the last 3 years, we were raising this issue for a very long time, and unfortunately, none of the governmental bodies supported our appeals. But finally, a group of members of parliament, they agreed to support our quest for the reform, and they initiated a new bill at the beginning of this year. So since April 2020, I have been a member of the Parliamentary Working Group on the development of a new bill on prevention of domestic violence. And so what's happened is that, you know, during all of these meetings, we've seen lack of support from the police, as I earlier mentioned, because they still believe that no law, there is no need for any new law. And in September, this bill, it entered parliament. And it was approved in general in the first reading. But then all of a sudden, a campaign started against the bill. And the people who started this campaign, unfortunately, they started spreading a lot of manipulative and fake information about the law. They started appealing to parents. So again, they drew the attention from women only to children. And they started claiming that this law would eliminate the right of parents to beat their children as part of punishment. Mm. And unfortunately, in Kazakhstan, according to the UNICEF report of 2016, 75% of parents, they approve corporal punishment for their children as a type of education. And unfortunately, you know, we see that mostly these parents who actually openly saying that this is our right to, by the law, to beat up our children, and we are against this law because this law would not let us beat our children anymore. And then and now they are attacking, you know, the members of parliament, the members of the working group, including myself, who is trying to educate them and tell them that, no, you know, the law is protecting everyone, you know, against domestic violence. And indeed, according to our laws, our legislation, it is forbidden to beat our children, you know, to beat any person in the country. And however, yes, we are right now, you know, having this confrontation, and the bill has not been cancelled, but, you know, it could have been passed, you know, this year, but okay. Now it has been delayed for further consideration into the next year.
Okay, so there is still a hope. Okay, that's great. But
yes.
So this has been a real challenge, right? I mean, Bruce, let me bring you in here. I mean, is there anything changing? I mean, it's been like 25 plus years since the countries are independent, and we are hearing these kind of terrible, horrible stories coming out of Central Asia in terms of domestic violence. Where are we headed? Are we going forward, going backward? Is there anything changing? If changing, in which direction it's changing?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. I mean, on the one hand, you'd have to say the fact that it's getting more the problem is getting more publicity is something that's positive, because that's, you know, everyone's got to accept that this is a problem before you can try to cure it. And there certainly has to be a different understanding about that, you know. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of these countries are becoming more conservative because the people are becoming more religious, and that tends to work against women's rights a lot of times. You know, especially, you know, we've been talking about the court system, but certainly, you know, the local clerics, the religious figures, are also some of the people who don't, you know, they're against divorce, period. And they consider that these kind of things are family problems, and they can't, it's for whatever, in their eyes, it's part of the culture, it's part of their interpretation of the religion or something. But, you know, so you get kind of both. I mean, there are feminist movements that are coming up, and they're raising this problem. It's getting more attention than it used to. Every now and then there's some breakthroughs, but it's kind of being pulled back by the more conservative elements in the society who, you know, look at these, look at what the women are fighting for. And, you know, the feminist movements are a great example. A lot of the male dominated organizations see this as if not a threat, something that they certainly don't want anyway. Right. And they equate that with contemporary society, you know, Western culture, whatever, something like that. So, you know, they're against it on the grounds that it's too liberal and too far ahead, when in fact what they're talking about is equality. It has nothing to do with trying to leave the culture or work outside the culture or certainly damage the local cultures at all. But it's like they see that as a challenge, and mm-hmm. And the pushback is what you get, you know, mm-hmm. that in a lot of these places. Things are probably a little worse than they were when in the last days of the Soviet Union. Because let's face it, you know, for all the problems the Soviet Union had, a lot of times when, you know, there was something, it was more equal in some ways. Everyone was expected to work. If you had a serious problem, there probably was a chance that a court would grant a divorce mm-hmm. in the relationship.
Yeah. Let me also take Khalida and Irina, you guys' opinion about this in terms of the changes. I mean, you know, it's a tough battle that you are engaged in. So two questions there. First is, like, how do you see your own impact in the society in terms of the changes that you are trying to see happen? Is it changing? If changing, in what direction? And also the second thing is, as I said, it's a tough battle. So what really keeps you motivated to keep this fight? Let's start with you, Khalida, then Irina.
You know, I'm really motivated by the fact that I will continue living in this region, in this country. And of course, I see that there are a lot of challenges. And that's why, as a researcher, as a scientist, 2 years ago, I started a human rights education project for children. I see that, unfortunately, it's very difficult to change the mindset, the mentality of adults in our country. And that's why I now more work with children and with teachers. And I work directly with the Minister of Education, trying to convince them to introduce mandatory human rights classes for school children starting from the primary school. Because unfortunately, in our education, there is very, very scarce legal education, human rights education offered to school children. Mm. And they don't learn anything about their rights. They don't learn anything about gender equality and also mechanisms how to protect their rights in case of violence and so on.
Are they listening to your proposals? I mean,
You know, at the beginning, they didn't really listen much because, you know, it's still a sensitive issue to talk about human rights in our country and human rights education. But whenever I talked about human rights, they always became very, you know, skeptical, or I would say they saw this idea as a threat, you know. But eventually they understood, you know, through this regular dialogue, they understood that only the knowledge of human rights would help children to protect themselves from violence. Mm. Because this knowledge, such skills, you know, they would enable children to identify whenever they may become victim, you know, of violence, and children would not be afraid to report such incidents to the police, to their teachers, you know. And luckily, over 1 year, we made much progress in this area. And for example, I developed a human rights education program based on the street law, U.S. Educational program, and we managed to introduce it into the governmental program for 2020-2023 as a form of extracurricular education for children. And this program was adopted by the Prime Minister of Kazakhstan, so at a very high level, and now all education departments and local municipalities, they have to introduce this type of education in their schools. Mm. But it's still, you know, not mandatory. It's still like a form of extracurricular activities, but at least, you know, it gives us a way to continue our classes and teach children how to protect themselves from violence through this discussion on human rights, gender equality, and so on.
Right. Okay. Irina, how do you see, let me put it in this way. So when you look back into the impact of your own activism as part of the Nemulchi and some other NGOs who are also involved in the similar activities, how do you see your impact, and how do you see the changes that have been taking place in Uzbekistan on this topic?
I think that my project changed stereotypes. Mm-hmm. For example, 3 years ago, when I started Nemalchi.uz, I started to write about victim blaming, and nobody accepted it. I was emotionally burned out to explain what is victim blaming, why it's bad thing, etc. But now I see that many people support me and write about this and consider that victim blaming is unacceptable. I started my project in July 2017. And after half an year, in January 2018, our president started to talk about domestic violence. I don't know if it was because I started my project before, but for me, it was a sign that I do important work. And it motivated me to work to write about this problem. I'm motivated by the desire to improve the lives of people around me. And I think that everyone has a right to live without violence, because life without violence is norm.
Right, yeah. Finally, it's not a lot of change, but something, which is great. Bruce, let me bring you in here. So what really can be done to accelerate the type of change that we have been talking about with Khalid and Irina?
Well, kind of like we heard it, you have to have a mind, a reset of the way you're looking at this.
How to achieve that, really?
Well, certainly the media and other areas. I mean, it has to be really clear about how much women contribute to the society and how much they could contribute to the society. Mm. And the fact that we're in countries, the greater the equality, the better off the whole country is. You can't separate half the population and give them one set of rights and the other set doesn't have access to those kind of rights. There's no difference in the professionalism, the intelligence, any ambition, anything, any of that stuff. I mean, you only gain when there's equality in the society. And this has to be something that's hammered home, TV, radio, in the print media, and it has to be something that the officials that talk about it believe in, too. I mean, people have to be able to see that that there is this. We heard Irina was mentioning earlier, there's only one person in the government that's a woman in Uzbekistan. And, right. this sends a bad signal. I mean, Kyrgyzstan, of course, has a 30% quota, which they still don't meet. But there's got to be a woman's presence in all these things, all these stages, different agencies in the government, so that people can see that they can do the job just as well as anybody and kind of break down some of the walls of these prejudices that have increased over the years or been set in those societies from years ago or something. But, it really takes like an active campaign and not simply, like you said, a piece of paper that says, here's your rights. And we promise that if you go to court that, that you'll get a fair hearing and everything. And, that doesn't mean anything. There has to be like real examples that this is working. And I think once they let that happen, they'll see the benefits of it very quickly.
Terrific. Okay. So just some final thoughts here. Let me first take your remarks, Khalida, and then Irina. Now that you guys have been in this field already for some time, to some extent you learned how to work within this environment. And thanks to your work, there has been some changes, but there are a lot to be desired yet. So going forward, what are some of the areas you will be more focused on? And also, what are some of the specific projects that you have in mind, which will make sure the changes that have already taken place permanent and add new columns into the list? Also, is there anything you are planning to do differently?
So my future plans would be to continue this work, because we understand that the changes, they don't come easy, but they still come and they come gradually. And that's why, even though, I may have sounded, pessimistic about the ongoing situation, but actually, if we look over a span of several years, we still have achieved a lot. So, for example, the situation right now is much better than it used to be 10 years ago. And I'm sure that it will improve and evolve. And eventually, we will manage to create this society free from violence, inclusive for everyone, and humane to any person and to the survivors of violence. I'm very sure about that, and that's why I will continue my work in this area, as including, you know, in the area of education, educating children and adults on human rights and prevention of violence, and promoting and advocating for the adoption of changes to the legislation.
Is there any specific project that you could talk about? And also, is there anyone who can help you?
You know, we are, for example, as I mentioned, my project is called Street Law Kazakhstan. We cooperate with the original organization Street Law Incorporated in the US and other street law local trainers across the globe, you know, to promote this type of project. And another project also that we have, for example, is the project on battling sexual harassment in public places and corporate places. And already we get some support from foreign embassies in Kazakhstan, like the Canadian embassy, and we will be really appreciative for such support from international organizations and foreign states who see the value in gender equality and in combating any type of violence. So we are open for cooperation.
Thank you. Okay. Irina, your turn. So what are you planning going forward in terms of the things that you would like to see achieved in Uzbekistan? I would be really happy if you can speak in concrete terms. And also, is there anyone in the world who can help you to achieve those objectives? In concrete terms, what are the things that would help you to achieve those things?
I think that international institutes, for example, UN or EU, they must give more financial support to activists, not to our Gonga, because this is other problem of Uzbekistan, that a lot of NGO really are not really a state-based NGO. They organize it by government.
We call it Gongos.
Yes, we say it's Gongos.
Yeah.
And when I see that UN or other institutes supports this Gonga, they support only government. They don't support activists at all. And it's difficult to register NGO in Uzbekistan. It's difficult to work as NGO, as a civil NGO in Uzbekistan. So I want to see more support for activists, for real civil society, not for Gongos.
Right.
And I think it's very important point in every sphere, not only in women rights. It's also in ecological rights or disabled people rights, etc.
Right. And about your own future plans, is there anything you are really excited about and you are looking forward?
Well, next year I launch a social campaign, but I can't speak about it because it's secret now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but I plan to talk about our problems, and because we need working clothes. It's necessary to create a system to protect women from violence and harassment and change divorce laws and ensure that we have real gender equality, not in words, not in paper, but in reality.
Right. Okay, final words, Bruce, if you would like to add anything. Otherwise, I'm going to conclude the discussion here.
Just to say, to express my admiration for both Halida and Irina for their work.
Yeah.
You know, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's really important work, and I wish you both all the luck possible in the future.
Yeah, and I second Bruce. Thank you. Please keep up the God's work. Certainly, we are keeping close eyes on those issues and the type of activities that you are involved in. You are most welcome anytime to join us on this platform. Thank you very much, Halida Ajigulova, the director of the Research Center for Human Rights, Inclusion in Civil Society in Kazakhstan. Also, big thanks to Irina Matvienko, feminist activist and the director of the Nemolchi.uz. And Bruce Spanier, thank you very much for joining us today, all of you. Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C.